It's the 14th of March 2014. This is the second interview of the Oral History Program on the Early Settlers of Hall. Today's interview is a little different from the normal, because today I'm talking with Tom Penders and Liz Kilby, who are two of a number of Dutch families that migrated to Australia and came into the Hall District in the late 1940s and 1950s. Now, Tom and Liz, how did you, we'll take one at a time, maybe Tom first, how did you end up in Hall?
Well, there was a chap called Tom Rasker, who worked at Glenwood Station, and he met up with a girl here, Betty Lee, finished up marrying her. But anyhow, he came from the same district where we came from in Holland, and he met my brother here, and he said, oh, to find accommodation was a major problem in Canberra at the time. He said, I might be able to find something for you. And he did. And we finished up having a in Thickness House there. You know, that's where we lived for a little while.
What made you decide to make the move, apart from...
From Holland to Australia?
Yeah. What was the attraction?
The war had just finished. Things were pretty grim, really, in Holland. Most of the shipping was down the bottom of the sea. Trade was gone. On top of that, the colonies went. It was a major disaster for the Dutch, you know, and the same, of course, for the British and the French and so on. When they lost the colonies, that was not only the trade, but also, they used to take a lot of people. On top of that, a lot of those people who were in the East Indies, they came back to Holland. So many more came into Holland than actually went out, if you get my drift. And so, we heard about Australia. They advertised a lot. They used to have, I think, possibly from the Australian Embassy, I'm not sure, but they used to give a lot of talks, try to get people interested in coming up here.
You came out in 1948, is that
no,
right?
No, 1950. 51.
51.
My brother, my oldest brother, Chris, he came out a bit earlier. My dad was a bit careful. He sort of said, yeah, well, they all talk very nicely, but let's send somebody out ahead before we stick our neck out. And he did. And then Chris wrote back, you know, how much we could earn and what the place was like. So we said, well, why not?
And how old were you in 1951?
I was just 18.
Right. And do you have a trade?
No. I'd finished high school and I was working in an office, just an office worker.
Mm.
And then we came out here and working in the public service, could have gotten in, but they didn't earn that much. I could earn a lot more working as a builder's labourer than I could earn in the, as a public servant.
But before you got into the district, did you go through the normal migrant process of going into a camp, Bangila or anything like that?
No, we didn't.
So you had sponsorship to go?
Yes, we could come. Well, because my oldest brother went ahead, and he sort of, because my other two brothers, and they were the same like myself, we'd all sort of finished high school and so on, so he thought it was wise if we moved somewhere where we could find an office job eventually.
Mm.
And, he turned out he was right, you know.
Mm.
And that's very... But he was in one of the camps, I forgot now which one. Oh, near Sydney somewhere.
Mm.
But he wasn't there very long. He was single, you know, and he sort of said, oh, I'll go and have a look in Canberra.
Mm.
And then he ran into this chap, it's Tom Rasker. And,
Now, Liz, now I know you were a little younger because you went to Hall School.
Mm.
So, how old were you when you came out and when was that?
I left Holland on the 18th of October on my 12th birthday. The ship sailed on the 19th. Yeah.
And did you have somewhere to come when you...
Well, my father came out first, the same as Tom's brother came out. My father flew out here to see what it was like and sent for us, and we came out on a ship and 6 months later. And my father, I don't understand why, but he came straight to Canberra when he arrived in Australia. And he was very much into the Wesley Methodist Church, because he was a musician and played organs and things. And we came straight here, straight to Canberra, and lived in a... babysat a few houses before the Kilby's huts became available, the shearers' quarters. And we lived there for about 18 months, I think. Hmm.
I should mention, I didn't do it in the introduction, Mrs. Kilby's maiden name is Krutoff, and Elizabeth Krutoff. How did you feel when you arrived in Australia, do you remember?
Great. I thought it was a lovely place. Yeah, I came alive, I think, because I didn't have much of a time in Holland. I had a bad time in Holland. Well, the war was one thing, but I didn't seem to have any friends much or anything like that. Coming to Australia, and especially living in the shearer's huts at Homely, was a pretty marvellous thing.
I know, Elizabeth, that you didn't speak English when you arrived. What about you, Tom? Could you speak English?
Yeah, reasonable. In Holland, of course, when one goes to high school, well, they all learn to speak English, French and German, and Dutch, of course. On such a small trading nation that it's important that they learn those foreign languages, you know. I didn't mean we spoke it fluently, but, well, we managed reasonably well, you know. Yes.
How did you find when you got here? Were you well accepted into the community?
Oh, yes, very much so, yes, yes. Well, my parents lived out at Hall here first because I only had a couple of rooms. And my twin brother and myself, we lived in Riverside Hostel. And, it was a rough old place.
Well, can you describe it for us?
Oh, well, there was a lot of, well, how do I put it? They were nice enough people, but a lot of them were displaced persons, just come out of camps. A lot of them were ex-army people, either from Scotland, England, from all over, you know. So there was a lot of fights, but nothing very serious, you know, no knives or anything like that, but, well, it was a rough old place. But the food was good, and if you kept, you know, your wits about you, you didn't have to get involved, which we didn't. We sort of just, well, but, yeah.
But when you arrived in this area, or started work, it was a different situation.
Yes, and we... there was plenty of work, and I said working in the building game at the time, that was really extremely well paid. It was for us anyhow, you know.
And did you work for private builders or...?
Private builders, yes.
Yeah,
yes,
and building houses?
Building houses or buildings and things.
And where were they?
There was one German contractor, a chap called Karl Schweiner. He built a lot of homes. You remember him?
Yep.
He built a lot. He was an Austrian chap, and he built a lot of homes all over Canberra. Very successful. And then afterwards, we worked for Kennedy and Bird, another contractor. And then I thought, well, that's enough now. And then I joined the public service, and only as a clerk, and and I had a problem because understandably so, my qualifications weren't good enough. You know what it was like them days. So I thought, oh, well, that's the case. We'll go to the do a course at Canberra High to do a, what they call, leaving certificate. And that was all right. That was good, really. And it was the marvelous thing was, we only had to do four subjects. If I forgot, four subjects to get you leaving, five to matriculate. And it was marvellous, you know, because in Holland we did 14. So this was, we thought it was fantastic, you know. And you could pick and choose, except English, of course, was compulsory. Maths was compulsory. But the other subjects, you know. And so we thought that was really, really good. And I did that. And, yeah, it took me a year going at night classes, you know, but yeah.
No, very good. Now, Elizabeth, your time at Hall School we know about because you've put together a wonderful book called Round the Butt Tree, where you compiled, probably from your own memories and memories of other pupils of various times from the opening of the school right through, and recounted their time at Hall Public School. So what was it like for you coming in as a young Dutch girl, couldn't speak English? How did you manage and get on with the other children?
Well, it was rather difficult in the beginning because I couldn't speak English, but I somehow picked it up fairly quickly, I think, and I think I fitted in quite well, yes. Got made friends in there, and yeah, it was good, yes, I enjoyed it.
Were there any other Dutch children in your class?
No. We were the first migrants in Hall School.
Oh, you're the trailblazer.
Poor Mr. O'Sullivan had a bit of a bad time, I think, trying to teach six classes plus us little, my sister and I, speaking English.
So did he spend extra time with you?
No.
Right. No. So how did you find picking up English then? Just by going,
I can't remember really. I can't remember not ever being able to speak English, but it must have been, well, it was difficult in the beginning when we lived in Canberra for a while. I was made to go shopping and things, and you'd point at something and say, you want some of that, and you know, that sort of thing, yeah. But it, I lived at Homely in the huts there, and we walked to school, which is a couple of k's, I suppose, isn't it? And Melda, Bessie's sister, she walked to school with us, and she would tell us all these stories, my sister and I. And she would say something, and she'd say, do you know what that means? And I'd say, no. And she'd explain that to me, and then on she'd go. And this happened for 12 months. Or more. And I think just by listening to her and going to school, and Mr. O'Sullivan, he tried very hard to teach me, and the THs didn't quite come out the way they should, and he used to spit at me.
That's a problem.
But no, I found it quite good. Yes, I really enjoyed it all.
There was no sort of discrimination? For one
no.
of the rules? No.
Not that I was aware of.
We never noticed it, no. No, no. People were very nice. No,
everyone great. In Hall was just in wonderful and very welcoming to us.
Nice. Yeah, very good.
You mentioned you lived in the shearers' huts for a while. What was that like?
Oh, it was great. My mother didn't like it very much, but I did. It was on a farm, and for some reason I must have been born to be a farmer's wife, I think, because I first thing I did was learn to milk a cow. And that was the worst thing I could have done, really, because I ended up milking a cow then for quite a few years.
Yes.
And before I went to school and before I went to work after that, I had to milk this wretched cow every morning. I didn't mind it at weekends, but it was a bit much getting up in the morning in your dirty old clothes and walking down the vale and mud that deep.
What about entertainment?
Well, there was a picture theatre. Well, Saturday nights. And what's his name? Big fella there.
Colin.
Big Col Sousel.
Colin Southwell.
Yeah. Big Colin, yeah. And I can still, during the interval, they all used to go out and have a cup of coffee at Gordon Murphy's. And then, you know, and then it was supposed to start up again. And someone saying, no, no, Murph's not back yet. And then the next thing, he said, let her rip, Colin. It was all fun, wasn't it?
Mm.
Yeah, it was fun. It was actually great.
Did the Dutch community, when a few more families joined you in this area, did they get together for gatherings of any sort, social occasions? Or?
Oh, no, we might have met up. I know we met up as a guide of sometimes, but never any very much, because they were all, you know, some stayed, some didn't, and moved on, and it was sort of one of those things, you know, they, no.
We met at church and at the pictures, like you say.
Yeah.
But no, we didn't, as a group, come together, no.
What was in the village as far as businesses went in your time, you know, in the 50s, that apart, you know, we know that there was stores there and Jim Rochford's garage.
Yeah. Well, that was about
just it. The Hall Premier store was there, and Jeannie ran that.
Mm.
It had a little post office alongside, next to the shop, built onto the shop.
Oh, yeah.
And Gordon Murphy operated that.
Yeah.
He had a telephone exchange in there, and the we could not ring people individually. We'd have to ring the post office and ask for a number, and they put us through that way. So Gordon was a very busy man. And it was that, the garage, as you said. Next to Kinleyside Hall was a little shop, which was, at my time, was run by Mavis Bolton.
Yeah, that's right.
And then Mavis left and got a job in town, and Gordon Murphy took it over. So then the post office moved into this little shop there, and he had a milk bar and sold a few groceries and things. I even worked there at weekends for a long time.
Mm.
Yeah.
So that was in competition with the Premier store?
More or less. Yeah. It was quite interesting, because at those times the Catholics and the Methodists and that were a bit separated, weren't we?
Well,
and Gordon Murphy being a Catholic, and the R.H. Brown was a Methodist, so all the Methodists went to Gordon's shop and in interval, and others went to Gordon Murphy's shop to buy some lollies and things. It was very interesting. Hmm.
Was that quite noticeable, living in associated with the village, demarcation?
No, that wasn't. No,
not really.
No, it
not
wasn't.
Really.
No.
They're all very nice to one another.
Yes.
And as a matter of fact, if there was work being done around the church and there was help needed, quite a few of the Methodists came over and helped, and vice versa. Mm. So they worked in very well together.
Yes.
They were,
there was
had a difference of beliefs, but not as far as people are concerned.
And a difference where they bought their lollies.
Yep. And if anybody did, they were soon told off.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's good.
I remember one chap there, City Sassel, and he was a bit of a hard case, and he had put an ad in the paper for somebody to work on the farm, and then Catholics, no need to apply. Well, even Ross Brown and Gordon Murphy both refused to serve him. Sit out, yeah. Well, a stupid thing to do, you know. But I said he knew about it, because he had to go to Queanbeyan then or to Canberra to buy his groceries. It sort of they didn't want that sort of thing, you know. It was,
So there was quite a strong community spirit,
in those days. Very strong one. It was just one big happy family. It's completely different to what it is today.
Oh, yeah.
They welcomed us, and especially Jean in the shop, she welcomed everybody that came into the village, and it was just wonderful. It was a wonderful place.
Good.
I think it was.
Did you have an association at all with the hall show? Was there?
Yes, the hall show was there. My Wes's parents worked at the hall show all most of their lives, and Wes did too. He entered into the show all the time. Yeah, that was part of our lives every year, I think.
Because that's a big part of the hall community, isn't it? Up until it moved to 1964.
Yeah, well, it went to Canberra, but a lot of the hall people came along with the show to Canberra. But gradually that's changed now.
Tom, we spoke earlier about your education and catching up doing the leaving certificate. You started work in the public service as a clerk.
Didn't like it very much.
And then you started doing the building.
No, the building was beforehand.
Oh, it was before that, okay.
Yeah, but we built our house beforehand.
Tell me about that. Tell me about building your house.
Oh, well, my parents liked it, Ian Hall, and so Dad sort of thought about either building in Canberra or in Hall. It didn't matter where you went in Canberra, to a block of land was free. You could, you know, maybe not on Red Hill, but anywhere else you could just... And so they said, well, Dad said, I like it here. And so did my mum, you know, they liked Hall. Said, we built here. And that's what they did. They got half acre block and they built a house there. Yeah.
How long did it take?
Oh, about 6 months, I think.
And that house still standing today?
Yes. What's his name?
Alistair.
Alistair.
Yeah, Alistair Crombie lives there, and he's very happy living there.
Yes.
But you lived in the garage first. You built the garage first and lived in that.
No. We lived in Tickner's place next door.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. We didn't live in the garage. Van Slags did. They lived in the garage.
Yes.
But we didn't. We lived in Tickner's place, and then they rented, I forgot now, half the house, I think. And we then built the house then. But, the biggest problem was to get materials, you know. It wasn't the work. It was to get hold of building materials. Very difficult to get. It was an awful shortage at the time. But it all worked out.
Is that because they were building so many houses in Canberra? Or?
Yes, everywhere. And apparently, I'm not quite sure, but I believe before the war, during the Depression, everything had stopped. Then during the war, of course, it stopped again, and then there was an awful shortage. And so people started to build after the war, and it was difficult to get... But some people were very good, like Norman Carlton, and so helped us a lot to get things organised, to get hold of materials and things.
Norman Carlton was a real estate agent.
Yeah.
In Hall.
Right.
Yeah. He knew the ins and outs.
So how many were in your family that were living in that house?
Oh, there was my mum and dad, and I had two brothers.
Right.
Yes.
Chris. What's happened with the family now?
Both my brothers passed on. Chris was always a good student. Went to uni, did a degree, all bad time, of course. And then he decided to carry on. He did a PhD then. And then he did Germanic languages as a major. Now, his prof was a chap called Lodewijks. He was the father-in-law of Manning Clark, the historian. And Chris had done also, just as an extra subject, he decided to do Australian history. He said, oh, that would be an interesting one. And, of course, between the two of them, between Manning Clark and his father-in-law, there was always this bit of, you know, it was only fun. Manning Clark would say, what the heck do you want to do German for, you know? And the other chap would go, Australian history? What Australian history? You know, there isn't any. You know how they carry on. But he did. But Manning Clark talked my brother into doing Southeast Asian history as a major, because Chris spoke obviously Dutch, but also German and French, as well as Malay. And there's no way you can do Australian history or Southeast Asian history unless you can speak those languages. I mean, it's out of the question, you know. And French, of course, they were all there. English, of course, obviously, but so Manning Clark talked him into it. And, Manning Clark was also smart on his side, because Chris did a lot of translations of the early Dutch explorers and so on, so it all worked out nicely.
Mm.
Yeah, and then Chris he became a lecturer in Brisbane at the uni, and afterwards got a professorship there and so on, yeah. And Bert, the twin brother, he just did his high school, like myself, leaving certificate, matriculation. Then he got a job in New Guinea and worked in the public service there, in the Australian part, you know. Yeah.
Mm.
And did finished off his degree there. He did that on a part-time basis and, well, came back here to Canberra. And he got a good job. He was lucky in a way. He had a bit of a run-in with the Minister of Territories when he was in New Guinea. Apparently, not quite certain all those, they've got those facts right or not, but apparently Papua was Australian territory, but not New Guinea. New Guinea was the former German territory, and Australia were the administrators. Now, something happened, I'm not quite sure what it was, but my brother stood, you know, he said, he was never known for diplomatic skills. Mm. If it was black, white, no grey, you know, he was always like that. And he had this run-in with a chap called Haslack. He was Minister of Territories at the time. And he refused to back down, and he said, he was in Rabaul then. He said, I'll take it up as United Nations. And Haslack had to back down. I don't know what it was. He never said. Then when he came back to Canberra, you know, things collapsed in New Guinea, you know, they all had to get out. He started work in the Department of Defence. He hadn't only been there for a week. And one morning, Haslack walked in. By that time, Haslack had become Governor General. And he saw my brother, and my brother said to him, good morning, Excellency. He said, good morning. Hey, I remember you, Rabaul. I said, oh, bloody hell, you know, this is lovely. And, you know, he said, what are you doing here? He said, he said, okay. An hour later on, he got a telephone call to go and see Haslack at Government House. He said, now I'm in his backyard, you know. I've got no big stick behind my door. And so when he got there, and Haslack said, well, what are you doing, that and that? He said, okay. He said, listen, I've got a job here. Apparently, I'm not quite certain on those things, but apparently certain jobs, even if they're in the public service, the appointments made by the Crown, not by the Public Service Board. Apparently that's how it works. Then he said to Bert, said, listen, he said, I've got a job going as head of the Public Accounts Committee. Would you like to take it on? And his brother said, yeah, fantastic job, really. And he said, well, yes. He said, but why? Oh, he said, that's easy. And he said, he was a real rough diamond, this Haslack, you know, he could swear like a trooper. And he said, well, you tell me in no uncertain terms where to get off. He said, I reckon you'd be good enough to tell any head of any department where to go, you know. And he got the job.
Mm.
So he was, it's amazing, isn't it?
Mm.
I always thought it was a real funny Australian story, that, you know.
Yeah.
How is it possible, isn't it? You know? Yeah.
So as the family grew, when did you leave the house in
Boscombe
Street? Yeah.
Oh, I'm just trying to think. Dad died first, and then Mum stayed on for a while, but it was too much for her, you know, the place was too big. But I'm just trying to think of the dates, I can't quite remember. Anyhow, she moved into the Goodwin Arms, you know, in a retirement village. Mm. And that was the best thing they'd ever done, because, you know, it was a big half-acre block. And we were a bit worried too, because she was on her own. And at the time, Chris was in Brisbane, Bert was still in New Guinea, and, you know, not a good idea. And I was away often, you know, in Melbourne or Sydney or somewhere, you know. We really couldn't look after her properly in Southern Melbourne. And so when she sold out, and then Alistair, he liked the house, and
he bought it.
He bought it, yes, yes.
Back to you, Elizabeth.
You didn't tell us about the vegetable cart, you know.
Me?
The vegetable cart.
That too, yes, I did that when I went, when I left. I was in 57, I decided to go. I was sick of the public service. Didn't like it very much. I really didn't, you know. It wasn't my, you know, I don't know how to put it. I felt there was a lot of backbiting going on and this sort of thing, and I couldn't handle it really, you know. I said, well, if this keeps going on, I'm going to finish up in Bodder here, because I'll smack somebody in the mouth one day, you know, if this keeps up. And, well, I never did, but I could feel the urge coming up. I said, oh, what a heap of nonsense, you know. And I must have been a bit unfortunate, but, well, those things happen. And so I thought, I'll go back on a holiday to Holland, and I did that. And when I came back, I said, no, I don't want to go back in the public service. And so I carried on down the river there with the Market Garden bit. And then I gave that away, and instead of growing it, I was buying and selling. That's what I did. And, yep.
From a cart?
I did that, yeah, for quite a few years, yes. Yeah.
And you'd have a travel around?
Travelled around Canberra. It was good. Made a good living out of it, you know. And then they opened up the markets, and so I went and had a stall at the market for a while. And I used to go to Griffiths and places to buy fruit. Then a chap in Griffiths there, Nugan from a big packing house there, he talked me into working for him. So I did that in Sydney. And so I said, oh, why not, you know? But the wife didn't like Sydney very much. So we came back to Canberra. And by that time, one of the wholesalers here in Canberra asked me if I wanted to work for him, Canberra Fruit and Vegetable Distributors. And they said, oh, Tom, you spend a lot of time in the Sydney market, so you want to do the buying for us? And I did that for about 4 or 5 years, I suppose. And then the kids started to grow up, and Will wanted to go back to work. And so she said, well, I'd like to, but if you're going 3 or 4 nights a week, if you're not home, okay, I wasn't, you know, you have to go, if you go to the Melbourne market, you've got to leave on Sunday afternoon. You know, I didn't drive, I used to fly down, but even then, you've got to be there at 4 o'clock in the morning, you know. So I was away always 3 or 4 nights a week. And, she couldn't, you know, she couldn't go to work if I was doing those sort of things. And so I said, oh, well, I'll stop that. And then I worked at the CSIRO.
And what did you do at the CSIRO?
Oh, it was supposed to be a senior store supervisor. It was only glorified store, and that's all it was. But I thought it was wonderful. In the beginning, I thought, I'm not going to manage this. It's too slow. I thought, God, I'm going to finish it. You know, but I got used to it. I used to go around to see what the guys, what the scientists were doing and that sort of thing, you know, and it was good.
Didn't you have a shop in Dixon for a while?
Now, yes, I worked that for a while too. That was one of the things I did too in between, yes.
You mentioned your family.
Yeah.
Your wife. When did you get married?
Well, I met my wife here And she was also Dutch, but from the Dutch East Indies. And, yeah. So.
Got married, had got how married? Many children?
Three.
Yeah.
Three children, yes.
Do they still live in Canberra?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. We had one, I got one girl, two boys. One of the boys always was a problem. He's mentally retarded. And that nearly, yeah, we were nearly at the time thinking about going back to Holland because there was nothing here.
Mm.
You know, the only place we could go to in was in Stockton in New South Wales, but a 10-year waiting list. You know, it was really pretty dreadful. And we said, oh, this is not good. So we had him in a home in Katoomba. That was very nice, but it was privately run. And I had a mate who was a contractor, and I paid more than he was paying his bricklayers just to keep Robert in his home there. You know, it was awfully expensive. Well, what can you do?
Mm.
It's your son.
Yeah.
Nearly broke us. And I said, oh. And then, eventually they finished up doing something here in Canberra after a lot of pushing. And I think my twin brother pushed a bit. He knew more. He had more context than I did have, you know. You know how those things become political footballs?
Mm.
And I wasn't into that. It's, you know, I don't like that sort of talk. But Bert said to me, he said, no, he said, leave it as me. And he got things rolling. Because at that time, they were just, I'll put this without, I'm not trying to be offensive, but they were just trying to get also with the rest of the world, if you know what I mean.
Mm.
They also wanted to be part of it, and they have done very well since, but at the time they were sort of a bit backwards in many things, and they were trying to sort of also go forward. And so the twin brother said to me, Tom, he said, I've rang up the Department of Education and so on, you'll get them on your doorstep. He said, yeah, but don't give in. And said, well, you know, and he told me better than I did get the secretary of the department called, oh, Mr. Benders, you can't buy that. I said, look, mate, said, you guys put me over a barrel. He said, I can't live like this with the expenses we got. And so unless you're going to do something, a copy of this letter will go to Professor So-and-so of UNESCO in Geneva. Another one will go to so-and-so. I didn't know those names, but Bert did. And he said, look, he said, they'll move. And it was only a political football between Labour and Liberal, well, God knows what, I don't know. Then they moved, then they did something in Canberra too, eventually.
Mm.
Yeah.
From the five Penders that came to...
Five, yes.
Originally, and the three children in 1950.
Yeah.
How many Penders are...
I'm the only one left now.
Really?
Yes, 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 yes. Yeah.
But you have grandchildren?
Yes, I've got some kids, yes.
Right.
Yes, yes, yes.
So,
and so has the twin brother, and he got a couple of grandchildren. And,
right.
Yeah. They all seem to be going well, you know.
Mm.
And,
Chris get married?
Chris?
Yes.
Yes, he married too. He's got three kids, yes, you know. And Monica... She's the oldest, and she's done very well. She's never got married, but she spent a lot of time in the United States. She still flies up and down a lot between the two places and whatever. Stephanie's a school teacher. Yeah. And Bert's boys, he's got two boys and one daughter. And Tom, he's got a good science degree.
They're all pretty smart.
Yeah, they all worked hard, you know. They and Canberra was an ideal place because if you wanted to study, the opportunities were here.
Mm.
You know, but you had to do it. I mean, nobody gave you anything, but you could do it, you know. There was a chap here. You remember Tom Van Gogh? Well, Tom had virtually only elementary schooling in Holland. And, you know, and he worked as a labourer at the CSIRO, and then...
Technical assistant?
Yes, but he was, well, but he had no qualifications, you see. And then, I know we talked him into going to high school at night, and he did that. And, Tom, mind you, the chaps he worked with at the CSIRO were very good for him. Yeah, there was, I can't even think of the names now, but they were really very good. They helped him a lot.
Mm.
And he got a degree, and, well, yep.
Mm-hmm. Now, Elizabeth, we've heard from Tom,
yeah,
and we got up to the stage where you worked part-time in the lolly shop. When did you start full-time work, and where were you working?
Well, I left school before I turned 15 because I'd been sick a while, and second year at high school, my English hadn't caught up well enough to learn new stuff. I was well up to date in the first year, but second year I missed a lot of school because my mother got sick and I got sick, and there was about 5 or 6 weeks where I didn't attend school, so I said I'm not going back again. So I started work. I already was working for the Constance family. They needed someone in the house. She had 2 little boys and one was very sick with asthma. And I used to work there for a while, and then I ended up working at J.B. Young's in Kingston, which was great. I was there for about 12 months or so, I think, and I heard about the telephone exchange. So off I went and worked there for a couple of years. But the telephone exchange, I loved it, but it was shift work. And we lived at the time in O'Connor, and it was a long way from there to the GPO in Canberra. And at night time, at 11 o'clock at night, it was a bit hard to get home. No buses, no anything much. And then CSIRO came up, and I worked there for a few years. And that was good too. I enjoyed that.
Mm. There seems to be this connection with CSIRO.
I didn't get my license when I was 17, did I? It was a bit after.
Has she got it now, though?
Not yet. I was a clerical assistant for a while.
Mm.
But then another job came up in the garage there, and we looked after all the fleet of cars and trucks that were belonged to CSIRO. And so I got the driving experience with all those things.
Mm.
That's good.
And we organised trips around Australia and overseas for a lot of the research officers that went away, writing tickets and things like that, till I got married.
When did you meet Mr. Wesley Kilby?
Well, I met him here as soon as I landed in Australia, virtually.
There you are.
And I haven't left him alone since.
So love at first sight, as I say.
Yeah, well, the properties are one, you see. Mm. Lockley and Homely are the one property, so I saw him a lot on the farm here, and that's where I met him. And things progressed from there on. Took a while, didn't it?
So when did you get married?
The 29th of August, 1959. That's right.
And then you moved into here, Rockley?
No, we moved into Rosewood.
Right.
Rosewood, it's across the road, the first entrance coming from Canberra into Hall. Across the road there's a house there, you'll see the trees are still there that we planted there.
Mm.
And we lived there for 10 years, and then the government, because that block of land, all that block there, I don't know how many acres there was, but that we owned there, were farmed, but that was leased land, and the CSIRO had to move out of Dixon, experimental station, and they wanted our place.
Mm.
So they gave us about, 4 or 5 weeks to get out of that house. So Wes's parents lived here and they decided to retire into town and we moved in here.
And been here ever since.
Mm. Mm. 10 years we were married for before we moved here. Mm.
How many children have...
Three.
Three.
Four, sorry.
Lost count.
Four. Mm. Four
and
boys.
They grew up, of course, in this area, went to Hall School.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So there's actually 4 generations of children, Kilby's, went to Hall School. Mm.
That's
marvellous. And then it closed down.
Mm.
Mm.
What are your, you know, sort of memories of early life? Once you started on the farm, you said before that you thought you may have been a born farmer's wife. Did that, I mean, you just went straight into that role without any difficulty?
I don't think we had any difficulty, did we? I used to. No, I loved it. I did lots of things on the farm here in the early days, yeah. Farm work, it's great.
Mm.
Better than being inside all the time. But
Yeah, it's certainly a full-time job, rearing children and looking after the farm.
Running kids to school every day for a while. Mm, did a lot of that, yeah.
And what about your sort of social activities? Kilby name is sort of well known in the area. There's a lot of family gatherings and weddings, engagements, all those sort of things that you would have gone to over the years.
Yes, there would have been, yeah.
Mm.
Kilby's. Oh, social life, we didn't really, we were too busy for a great social life. We didn't ever go out very much in the early days, very little. And then Wes was involved in the bushfire brigade for a long, long time. He was captain for a long time and bushfires happened, and because Wes was the captain, he'd be off fighting bushfires and my phone would ring constantly. So I ended up becoming a communications officer. And that went on for quite some time. I can't remember how long. I've got it written down somewhere. But, until Wes wasn't well enough to continue with that job. And we gave that one away. Mm.
One thing you haven't mentioned, but I touched on it earlier about your interest in gathering historical information, and you've just produced another book on the Kilby family.
Well, the first one around the butt tree came along in, well, it would have been 1971 when we had this big celebrations. Get what year? How old were we then? 75, I guess.
Mm.
Yes, and I went to a meeting because I was a member of the Progress, the PNC Association at the Hall School while the kids were there. I always went. And they were talking about a cookbook, and I said, oh dear, a cookbook. I said, let's do something else. And I said, well, how about a book of stories about the old pupils that were around here? So I wrote to them all and found out their addresses, and yes, that's what I got back, and I just compiled it and published it. Mm.
And your latest book?
Oh, I started that about 1980 when Beryl Southall said to me one day, oh, you're interested in history, are you? And I said, oh, yes, more or less. And she says, well, you can do the Kilby family tree. And from there on, it's been an ongoing thing until I could not find anybody who would type it up for me. And someone came along last year and said, you know, I'll do it for you. And it got typed up and there it is. It was a lot of hard work the last couple of years.
Yeah, well, I must admit, both books are great reference material for the museum. We consult them all the time for background information.
Mm. Yeah, well, I think I've sussed out as much about the Kilbys as I possibly could.
Any skeletons in the cupboard, I should ask?
Well, they're in the book. Not many, but no, whatever. That's just what I did. I worked on the farm, but I also got a knitting machine. Was my first endeavour. When I first few years I was married, and started knitting jumpers, and then all of a sudden everyone says, oh, knit me one, and knit me one. So that became a bit of a business, and I knitted quite a lot of jumpers for people for a time. And then I learned to do leather work and, yeah, bookbinding and those sorts of things. So I've always been doing that sort of thing all the time, make a few bob on the side.
Very practical.
Yeah, I'm practical. I'm not intellectual, but I'm practical.
Okay, well, we've been going for nearly an hour. Would you like to cut it off there? Yeah, had enough? And have a cup of tea?
Sounds a great idea.